Фальче,
bienvenue.
Bienvenido.
Добродошли.
Магандан аро са иньо.
Welcome.
Добро пожаловать.
欢迎收听 Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Добро пожаловать to Here on Earth.
Bienvenido a Here on Earth.
¿Es verdad que dice San Pablo que las mujeres no enseñen?
It is true that St. Paul says that women should not teach. God does not want learning in a woman if it produces arrogance. Do not let yourself be carried away by your studies.
Pero los privados y particulares estudios, ¿quién los ha prohibido?
Who has forbidden women to engage in private and individual studies? Have they not a rational soul, as men do?
Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz overcame tremendous obstacles in order to become a writer. Born in Mexico around 1651, she claimed that the desire to learn was stronger in her than the desire to eat. She unsuccessfully begged her mother to dress her in men's clothing so she could study at a university. When she became famous as a writer and thinker, skeptical men subjected her to a test and questioned her work.
This study is incompatible with the blessed ignorance to which you are bound. You will lose your way. It is a sin for a woman to write poetry.
In persecuting me, world, what is your intention? How do I offend you, when all I desire is to place beauty in my mind, instead of focusing my mind on worldly beauty?
In her convent cell, Sor Juana conducted scientific experiments and said Aristotle would have learned more if he had cooked more. Who was this amazing woman, and how can we find inspiration today in both her life and her writings? I'm Emily Auerbach, in this week for Jean Faraca, who's in China, on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. If you've never heard of Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, and I sure hadn't until fairly recently, what would you like to know about her or about the life of an intellectual nun in colonial Mexico? Join us at 1-800-642-1234 or send us your comments and questions by email at hereonearth@wpr.org. Those voices you heard are from a Courage to Write radio documentary I did here at Wisconsin Public Radio on Sor Juana several years ago. And you probably recognize the silky voice of Jean Faraca as Sor Juana in English and her wonderful producer Carmen Jackson doing the readings in Spanish. There's a link to that Courage to Write website on our Here on Earth website for today. Joining me to talk about Sor Juana is Amanda Powell, a senior instructor in Romance Languages at the University of Oregon. Her publications include A Wild Country Out in the Garden, The Spiritual Journals of a Colonial Mexican Nun, and a translation of Sor Juana's The Answer or Reply to the Bishop. Later in the hour, we'll also be joined by Jorge Valdivia, the Performing Arts Director at the Mexican Fine Arts Center in Chicago. 2006 marks the 13th annual Sor Juana Festival, and we'll be finding out about what the center is doing in Chicago to celebrate this amazing Mexican nun and poet of the 17th century. Amanda Powell, welcome to Here on Earth.
Thank you very much.
It's so good to have you with us. What an amazing figure this Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz is. Can you tell me something about your own feelings about Sor Juana and why you think it's important that we know about her?
Well, I think the title of your show is marvelous. And at the same time, to paraphrase a colleague of mine, Annalisa Taylor, when she heard the title, the Female Shakespeare of Mexico, she remarked, did Shakespeare know that he was the Sor Juana of Britain? I think that I recently read a reference to Sor Juana as arguably not only the greatest writer of the Americas in the 17th century, but writing in any European language in her period. She was certainly within the Spanish Empire, which, of course, literally ruled the globe, great extensions of it in that period. At the time of her death, she was the most widely published and distributed writer in Spanish. So that's just to give an idea.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you how I learned about her. I had been working on this Courage to Write series of radio documentaries on women writers, women like Jane Austen or Emily Dickinson, the Brontes and so on, women who had to sometimes disguise the fact that they were women or undergo all kinds of mortification in order to become a writer. And a colleague said, well, why didn't you include Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz in your series? And of course, the answer was because I'd never heard of her. And I guess that's, you know, the next question I have for you is, if she is such an amazing figure, why have so many Americans not heard of Sor Juana? I mean, I got a PhD in English without ever having heard of Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz.
Well, there's a whole team of us trying to overcome that situation. But you know how it has been remarked that in Europe that Africa begins at the Pyrenees, and European history has long been studied in U.S. contexts, omitting Spain or with little mention of Spain. And so then New Spain, as colonial Mexico was then called, is even more of a lacuna, of a blank in terms of people's study. I think there are just all kinds of ideological, historical, and other reasons for that lack of attention. There was certainly a struggle through the 1970s into the 80s to get a whole range of women writers rediscovered and renown in English. And so it follows that we have to continue that and bring more world women writers into knowledge here in the States.
Yes, and I'd like to talk a little bit about Sor Juana's background, the class that she was born into Mexico. Can you give us some sense of who she was and what kind of ancestor she had?
Yeah, that's a great question. In her colonial Mexican society, she was what was then termed a criolla. In a very racist context, she was of entirely Spanish background, but born in the so-called New World in Mexico. Her mother never married and had partnering liaisons with several men, one of whom was Sor Juana's father. Her mother was obviously a remarkable woman, probably illiterate, very intelligent, and ran and managed for her father, for Sor Juana's grandfather, a large working hacienda near what's now the city of Puebla to the south of Mexico City. So Sor Juana came from a landed background with a certain amount of financial, you know, well-being, let's say. But at the same time, because her parents were not married, because she was what is termed illegitimate, there were certain factors that made her social standing quite precarious.
You know, I was struck by a few lines that she wrote about her illegitimacy and the fact that she wasn't going to feel ashamed by it. She writes, "As I see it, not to be born of an honorable father might indeed be judged a flaw if instead of receiving my life from him, my father had received his life from me."
Mm-hmm.
In other words, why should I feel ashamed? It's not my fault.
Yes, there are several places where Sor Juana makes a lovely distinction, and she's not alone among women in her period, and somewhat earlier as well, in making the distinction between what is actual law and what is social custom, and that social custom is often far more limiting than the law, and thus critiquing custom with regard to social treatment of women.
I guess one thing that has always moved me about the story of Sor Juana, well, I shouldn't say always, I guess ever since I learned about her and read her story, one thing that really moves me is just her passion for learning, her hunger to learn. And we've got a reading here, again, with Jean Ferraca doing the English version. This is Sor Juana talking about that incredible desire she had to learn.
Acuérdome.
I remember that in those days, though I was as greedy for treats as children usually are at that age, I would abstain from eating cheese because I heard tell that it made people stupid. And the desire to learn was stronger for me than the desire to eat, powerful as this is in children. Later, when I was 6 or 7 years old and already knew how to read and write, along with all the other skills like embroidery and sewing that women learn, I heard that in Mexico City there was a university and schools where they studied the sciences.
As soon as I heard this, I began to slay my poor mother with insistent and annoying pleas, begging her to dress me in men's clothes and send me to the capital, to the home of some relatives she had there, so I could enter the university and study. She refused, and was right in doing so. But I quenched my desire by reading a great variety of books that belonged to my grandfather, and neither punishments nor scoldings could prevent me. And so, when I did go to Mexico City, people marveled not so much at my intelligence as at my memory and the facts I knew at an age when it seemed I had scarcely time to learn to speak.
Isn't that amazing? Amanda, can you comment on that passage and just in general about Sor Juana's drive to learn?
Yes, well, and that's a lovely reading also. We have the story from Sor Juana, and she did indeed begin with the books in her grandfather's library and went on from there. She also recounts that she had a few lessons in Latin, not more than 20, which enabled her later to not only read many books in Latin, but compose poetry and prose written in Latin. And on the basis, presumably on the basis of a certain reputation that she was beginning to achieve when she was sent to Mexico City, not to go to the university as she had hoped, but apparently to live with some relatives, probably because it would give her more scope for her mind, she came to the attention of the then ruling powers, the ruling couple, the viceroy, and his wife, the vicereine, and she was brought to court to live as a sort of lady-in-waiting, a high-class attendant, servant, companion to the viceroy. And that would have given her exposure to a very wide range, a very cosmopolitan, extremely international culture, literature, music, theater, and so forth. And so that was obviously, she was quite young, but that was obviously an important period in her formation.
I also saw that she was writing about how if she felt she was being dull-witted or not studying well, she would cut her hair off as sort of a punishment. Can you talk about that, this sort of flagellation, self-flagellation?
Well, she says that it's a shame that, you know, a head should be adorned with hair but not with knowledge. And she, yes, I mean, they seem, you know, one has the sense in those portions of her writing of a very solitary girl and then woman, extremely self-motivated, as we would say now, pursuing learning above all else.
And she has so much to say about many topics, and we're going to sample some of the works. I know, Amanda, you've got some poems with you and things you'll be reading later in the hour. You're listening to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. I'm Emily Auerbach. This hour, Sor Juana, the female Shakespeare of Mexico. Sor Juana said that the desire to learn was stronger in her than the desire to eat. Have you ever felt that way? Have you read Sor Juana? I'm curious, have you ever heard of her? And if not, why do you think that is? If yes, what do you know about her? And if no, what would you like to know? Is there a contemporary Sor Juana, someone that reminds you of her? Join us by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send your email messages to hereonearth@wpr.org.
Here on Earth is the interactive radio show that features voices from all over the world. How about yours? The program airs live weekday afternoons at 3 Central Time. Podcast listeners can stream the show at our website, hereonearth.org. To join the conversation, call 1-800-642-1234 if you live in the United States or Canada. Elsewhere, drop us an email, hereonearth@wpr.org. Leave your phone number and we'll call you back. You can also post your thoughts at our web forum or leave a message at my blog. Skype users will soon be able to reach us as well. We're Radio Without Borders, Here on Earth, from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hombres necios que acusáis a la mujer sin razón.
You fool! foolish and unreasoning men who cast all blame on women, not seeing you yourselves are cause of the same faults you accuse.
That's the poem Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz is best known for, about foolish men. I'm Emily Auerbach. This is Here on Earth. Our topic is Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, 17th century Mexican nun and poet. And my guest this hour is Amanda Powell. And I'm very glad that she's able to join us from the University of Oregon. She is the author of books about the journals of a colonial Mexican nun and also a translation of Sor Juana's famous answer to a bishop who tried to silence her. Amanda, could you talk about, I guess, that poem, which I understand is one of the more famous poems that she wrote, and maybe even read the rest of it. Oh, and before I do that, let me remind our callers that you can join us on the air with your questions and comments by calling 1-800-642-1234. Again, that's 1-800-642-1234. Or send your email messages to us at hereonearth@wpr.org. So, Amanda, tell me about that famous poem that we heard a little bit of.
Well, it is a famous poem, and it's fun. It's well worth memorizing the first stanza in Spanish and going to Mexico, because lots of people memorize it in school, as school children. Perhaps more people memorize it than really think about the meaning.
Okay, so tell us the meaning.
Well, I think it would be important to read at least a little bit more of the poem.
Do, please do.
I have a translation here. For instance, Sor Juana says about men's attitude towards women, you combat their firm resistance and then solemnly pronounce that what you've won through diligence is proof of women's flightiness. What behavior could be odder than that of a stubborn man who himself breathes on the mirror and then laments it is not clear? Women's good favor, women's scorn, you hold in equal disregard, complaining if they treat you badly, mocking if they love you well. And then what's really quite astonishing, later in the poem, she says, but who has carried greater blame in a passion gone astray? She who falls to constant pleading, or he who pleads with her to fall? Or which more greatly must be faulted, though either may commit a wrong? She who sins for need of payment, or he who pays for his enjoyment? So we see that she gets right down to brass tacks with the question of prostitution and who is more at fault in that situation, in which men blame women as being flighty, lax, easy, and so forth, if women finally, after being begged, pleaded, cajoled, pressured, and so forth, if they finally concede to men's demands. In other words, it's a poem on the double standard.
Absolutely. So if a man seduces a woman and then she falls, then he blames her.
Oh, it's yes, of course, it's her fault.
That's good.
I ask my students in teaching Sor Juana and talking about this, of course, this is completely unfamiliar to you, right?
And they all say, oh, that's today. That's still today. We have a caller who's going to join us from Crystal Lake, Illinois. Rita, welcome to Here on Earth.
Hi, I can't hear you terribly well.
Oh, I'll try to talk a little louder. Is this better?
Okay. Yes. I became knowledgeable about Sor Juana Inés because for a long time ago, 30 years ago, I taught English to many people coming here in the migrant stream. I live in Crystal Lake, which is pretty close to Wisconsin, and lots of farms. And so I got to know many of them, and I thought they were really intriguing people, very, very hardworking people, and obviously highly intelligent. So that's where I began to find out about Sor Juana Inés. And I met a man, and I can't think of his name. I'm sure he's well-known, who wrote a book about her. He lived in Washington, D.C. He was a Mexican, I'm not sure what. I know he wasn't the ambassador, but he was something from Mexico, and met him at a party in Chicago. and talked to him about his works. This was quite a few years ago. And I was hoping somebody would remember who he was and the name of the book he wrote. I remember reading it, and it was all about Sor Juana and how difficult it was for her because of having to be living in a convent, but living under the thumb, as it were, of the clergy, who did not want her to become famous or well-known. But she was, because people used to visit the convent as just a fun thing to do. You know, rich people would have a party and say, let's go visit someone we know in the convent. So they were not out of social life. They had a social life. But she always had this problem of being just too smart. So does anyone remember who this person was who wrote the book about her?
Thanks for that call, Rita. Amanda, do you know which book she's referring to?
Well, I wish I could give the immediate bibliographic reference. I mean, if she's referring to the poet and writer Octavio Paz, he wrote the best-known large-scale biography and study of Sor Juana to date. But there's a really extensive bibliography on Sor Juana, and so I can't say definitely who it was that Rita met and talked with. I'd be happy to be in touch with her. I'll make my email available
to a
bibliographic search.
And actually, Amanda, your webpage is on ours now, and we also have an extensive bibliography on Sor Juana. I have no idea if this book is one of the listed books, but it's from the Sor Juana Project, which I believe is out of Dartmouth University. We have a link to that site on our website as well for Here on Earth. Rita, thanks for that call. Amanda, are there other passages? Well, actually, let me carry Sor Juana's life a little bit further, because we just referred to the fact that she was a nun and joined a convent, but the last you said she was in the court. You know, she had this sort of lady-in-waiting position. What would make this lively, spunky woman decide to take the veil?
Yes, that's an important question, and Rita raised such good points, too, about her life in the convent, which in many ways is not necessarily how we would picture it. As she said, it didn't mean utter exclusion or separation from the outside world. But at the same time, it was a very definitive choice, a choice that was going to shape the entire rest of her life, and a very serious one. Sor Juana says that she chooses the convent first of all and above all because of all of the options available to her, it would give her the most opportunity to continue her studies. And so I think we take her at her word, although in many cases her self-presentation, for instance, in the letter, the respuesta, the answer, her self-presentation is quite consciously shaped and directed in important ways, given her audience. Nonetheless, that's what she says about herself. She also mentions her utter disinclination to marriage, and that she makes clear that the choice of the convent would not necessarily have been her first, but that it was the most positive she could make to allow the possibility of study, and, she says, taking into account the eternal salvation of my soul, which is, in the end, the most important thing.
Well, and I suppose the cell was a way she could get a room of one's own, as Virginia Woolf would refer to it, and to get free from a life of constant childbearing, which would have been the reality of most women in the 1600s at that point, had she married, right?
Well, yes, and being, in effect, the property of a husband. So if one were fortunate, it would be a nice husband who would allow one to continue to study. But if one were less fortunate, then that would, you know, then one would be very limited indeed. As well as the hazards of childbearing. And her cell in the convent of St. Paula in the Order of St. Jerome, the convent that she eventually joined, she had a short stint in another convent where the way of life, probably was too harsh for her. She seems to have fallen ill after a couple of months and left. That was a discalced Carmelite convent with a rather more ascetic way of life. The quite prosperous convent that she entered for the rest of her life gave her, as you say, a cell, but a cell that's more like a condominium. Had an upstairs and a downstairs,
a kitchen where her servant and indeed her slave could prepare meals, wash clothes, and so forth. She had a very large library. She possessed a number of scientific instruments of the time, artworks, and so forth.
She seems such a Renaissance woman. I mean, doing scientific experiments and writing plays and poems, and she just seems to have wanted to do it all.
That's exactly right. She wanted to have the life of an intellectual and a person of letters at that time. And society offered no pre-existing niche for a woman of letters, as there would be a place for a man of letters. But that was the life, obviously, that she was made for, and the life that she pursued and thus made for herself.
Is there a sample of her writing that you'd like to share with us?
I thought maybe one of her sonnets, because it shows another side, in addition to what people have heard, the excerpts from her answer, Respuesta, and the poem, Hombres Necios, Foolish Men. This is a sonnet that in many ways follows traditions of love poetry in the period. The first line in Spanish is, Esta tarde mi bien cuando te hablaba. And my translation into English is this. This afternoon, my darling, when we spoke, and in your face and gestures, I could see that I was not persuading you with words. I wished you might look straight into my heart. And love, who was assisting my designs, succeeded in what seemed impossible. For in the stream of tears which anguish loosed, my heart itself dissolved, dropped slowly down. Enough unkindness now, my love, enough. Don't let these tyrant jealousies torment you, nor base suspicions shatter your repose with foolish shadows, empty evidence. In liquid humor, you have seen and touched my heart undone and passing through your hands.
That's beautiful, and you read it so beautifully. I bet we miss a lot not hearing it in Spanish. It's a beautiful translation that you read, but what do those of us who don't read it in the original Spanish miss out on?
You miss, in this case, the rhyme. I translated it in blank verse. Translation is a matter of immediate, evident, irreparable loss, and we hope some gain, because a new poem is created, but it's always a new poem.
Right. Well, I'd like to talk about the silencing toward the end of her life. I mean, one of the most painful parts of her life to read about is when they told her that she couldn't read and couldn't have her books. I mean, I just go nuts if I can't have a book. I'm one of those people that reads the cereal box or has to pick up the Golf Digest in a waiting room. I have to have something to read.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Sor Juana told that, you know, as a woman, she shouldn't read. Can you talk about the sort of gradual silencing of Sor Juana?
Well, I'm happy to, and at the same time, it's very important to note that I think more may be revealed with time about the life of Sor Juana, and in particular with regard to what did happen at the end of her life. In the last 11 years, there's been a kind of new direction in work on Sor Juana, and some exciting revelations, not yet, as I say, completely revealed, from Mexico, in particular by one historian, Elias Trabulce, who's published a certain amount of documentation, but not the complete documentation that he seems to have found, indicating in different ways that while Sor Juana was very deliberately silenced, she did not seem to have succumbed herself or accepted that silencing. And there's the indication of evidence that right to the end, she was hoping to ride out what was a difficult time under a combination of a lack of political support from the court in Mexico at that time, when her great allies, a particular pair of viceroy and viceroy, left Mexico and went back to Spain, combined with a hostile archbishop. So she was lacking political support from the court to counter a hostile presence from the church, from ecclesiastical powers, at that time in the 1690s. And yet there's evidence, for instance, that she, when she was forced to divest herself of a great number of books and so forth that belonged to her, there's evidence that she was rather clandestinely making important investments of money. And the historian Elias Trabulce suggests, you know, why does one make investments? One makes investments thinking about a future. And it seems likely that she was thinking, these are bad times. This is a politically difficult moment. I'm facing a lot of repression. I'll wait for things to get better. Thinking of a future that, alas, never came because she fell ill and died.
Of the plague, I believe I read. Something like that, perhaps.
Yes, a severe illness that went through the convent at that time.
I know I saw one passage, too, that struck me, that even when she was told she couldn't have her books, she writes that she kept looking at the perspective lines in the hall and figuring out the mathematical proportions just in the hallways and the building. So it's as if she just couldn't turn off her brain.
Yeah, she studied the Book of the World, as it was then called. She saw two little girls playing with spinning tops, and so she had flour put down on the ground and then had the tops spin again so that she could see what kind of patterns they were forming. There were many ways in which she was absolutely fascinated with laws of physics, perspective, as you mentioned. Apparently, she wrote an entire treatise on music and musicology, music theory, which has been lost. But she had a mind that was always active. And she also says that during the period of time that she was prohibited from study by a very holy but very ignorant Mother Superior, she lasted it out, entertained herself, as you say, and for the period of time that Mother Superior was allowed to remain in office. She always manages to slip in the last word.
Good for her. It's so heartening. And thank you. I know, Amanda, you have to rush off to teach a class at the University of Oregon. We're going to be joined by a guest from Chicago in a moment. But I wanted to take this time to thank you for sharing your knowledge of Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz and also your passion. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
You're listening to Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. Coming up, more on Sor Juana. What is the spirit that Sor Juana represents that's present in today's society? Are women still being silenced? You can join us by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send your email messages to hereonearth@wpr.org.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Meritor Retirement, a wellness and retirement community in the heart of downtown Madison, offering cultural and lifetime learning opportunities for active older adults. On the web at MeritorRetirement.com.
I shall make a duchess of this draggle-tailed gutter snipe, Henry Higgins says about Eliza Doolittle, and he does by eradicating her Cockney speech. In America, are Southerners unfairly judged as dumber than Northerners because of their drawl? I'm Emily Auerbach, in this week for Gene Ferracca. Language in Class, Thursday at 3, here on Earth, Radio Without Borders.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Cullen, Weston, Pines, and Buck, providing progressive legal counsel in labor and employment, governmental affairs, energy, and telecommunications since 1979. On the web at www.cwpb.com.
Vítor, Vítor, Catarina,
que con su ciencia divina los sabios ha convencido.
Catherine bears the victory, for with knowledge pure and holy, she's convinced the learned men and has emerged victorious with her knowledge glorious from their arrogance profane, which would convince and conquer her. Victory, victory, victory.
That's another famous work by Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, the 17th century Shakespeare of Mexico. I'm Emily Auerbach in for Jean Ferraca this week, although you heard her voice being the voice of Sor Juana. We're talking about Sor Juana. And joining us now from Arts Director at the Mexican Fine Arts Center in Chicago, 2006 marks the 13th annual Sor Juana Festival, and we'll be finding out about what the center is doing in Chicago to celebrate this amazing Mexican nun and poet of the 17th century. And I'd like to invite you to join us as well with your questions and comments. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send your comments by email at hereonearth@wpr.org. Jorge Valdivia, welcome to you here on Earth.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell me about this. First of all, tell me about your own feelings about Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. What does she mean to you?
Well, she means a lot, actually. I mean, she truly represents a Mexican woman who was determined to follow her own aspirations, a woman who was a genius, a creative, independent, and fought all odds to really pursue her own ambitions. So she means a lot to me. I mean, she truly does represent a lot to me. That and I think not just as a Mexican, but as I think she represents a lot to a lot of people, women, Mexican people, anyone out there who at one point or another feels blocked from the things that they want to pursue. And she found a way to overcome these obstacles and truly pursue her dreams and aspirations, and she was a genius. She truly I think when we were trying to come up with a name for the festival, it was very obvious that we wanted to call this festival the Sor Juana Festival. And so she represents a lot to our community, not just to me.
That's great. I'm going to invite a caller to join us, Lisa from Eau Claire. Welcome to Here on Earth.
Hi.
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 I'm really enjoying the program. I personally think that it's amazing that some of the writer's feelings still are pretty accurate in today's world. I work somewhat in a man's world. I sell automobiles. I have for the last 7.5 years, and that's majorly men, mostly in the industry. And it's always interesting to me how when I'm successful, it's because I'm a woman, and if I'm not successful, it's because I'm a woman. I try very hard to be more successful than them. I have won several contests. I mean, that's irregardless, but no one ever asks what the guy at the contest looked like, but they always wonder if a woman is there and what they look like.
Well, that certainly fits with Sor Juana's poem about being judged by the looks rather than what's in the mind.
Yeah, and when I do come home as a woman, a winner, I went to nationals sometimes, and this is just presenting different vehicles, but they always tell me that it's because of my physique, not because I'm just better than some of the other male components. And recently I went to Las Vegas, and it was a few months back, and they wrote an article, and I took second place, unfortunately, not first, but there was 7 other competitors, and they were all male, and they described us each, and I was described as passionate, and I was a little bit disturbed by that because I thought, my, you know, all the words that you could use, and you name the woman as passionate. I just thought, a man must have wrote that article.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful passage in Sor Juana where she says that she feels she's getting it from both women and men. She writes, "Women take offense that I surpass them, men that I seem to equal them. Some wish that I did not know quite so much. Others say I should know more. I seem to equal them. Some wish that I did not know quite so much. Others say I should know more to merit such praise. And all these sources together produce such a strange kind of martyrdom that I know of no one else who has undergone the like." So she certainly felt she was getting it from all sides.
Right.
Victor, did you want to add to, or sorry, Jorge, did you want to add to that?
Well, you know, it's interesting that the caller was upset about the words that were used to describe her. We in the brochure that we designed for this year's festival included certain words that we felt truly represented what the festival, the women that made up the festival, what they were all about, and what they were trying to do in their careers, and what they were trying to do for their communities, representing women in the arts in their communities, and truly being in the forefront of different issues. And so we use words like independent, creative, determined, strong, intelligent. We definitely didn't use passionate, but we did use certain words that we felt would give women a sense of pride as they went through the brochure and learned about Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz, this genius, this scholar, this first feminist of the Americas, as she's described at times, and feeling a part of the legacy of Sor Juana. And so that's really all I wanted to say about using words to describe certain women, because I think, I think the caller was right. We have to be careful because as men, sometimes we try to soften it up, if you will, and use words and sometimes overlooking the obvious that they are intelligent, that they are strong, that they are leaders.
Well, certainly Sor Juana was strong and intelligent. She's so amazing. I'd like to bring in a caller now, Mark from Oshkosh. Welcome to Here on Earth.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My comment is this. It just never ceases to amaze me how church fathers and fundamentalist Christians seem to be so deeply buried in the Old Testament Jewish culture and in the writings of Paul the rabbi, that again are more cultural in matters of the place of women, when Jesus gave us the final word in the story of Mary and Martha. Jesus and the apostles and Mary are in the living room discoursing, discussing, learning. And Martha is in the kitchen cooking and all in a dither, and she comes running into the living room and says, "Mary, get in the kitchen and help me make dinner." And Jesus says, "No, Martha. Mary has chosen the better part. She belongs here with us discoursing." The words from the mouth of Jesus in the place of women is that they should be learning. And I think Sor Juana is a perfect example of the unnecessary fight that women have to make in order to be a functional part of society when those doors should be open to them without any hindrance whatever. And I'll listen for my response off the air.
Thank you. Thank you for that comment. And it does bring into the conversation this whole religious opposition to what she was doing. Jorge, would you like to respond to that?
Well, the only thing I could say regarding that is that I agree with the caller. It's unfortunate that women continue to hit the glass ceiling in the corporate in corporate America. It's unfortunate that women have to take the extra step, leaps and bounds, more so than men, to prove themselves in the arts when addressing social issues. It's unfortunate that they have to do all these different things, but it's fortunate that there are women today that truly embody the spirit of Sor Juana, who are, as unfortunate as all these different things are, it's fortunate that there are women who are doing it, who are stepping up to the plate. plate and representing women of today and saying and women in the arts, addressing different issues that we have tried to identify through the Sor Juana Festival in honor. And as part of the festival, women who we feel truly, again, embody the spirit of Sor Juana, who have said enough, and we deserve to be recognized for who we are, respected, and treated as equals. And we agree. We agree. And that's why the Sor Juana Festival exists. That's why we do what we do with the festival year after year. This is our 13th year. And so while it's unfortunate that women have to, that women are faced with these obstacles, I think the one good thing that I could say that at least we're doing here through the museum, our small contribution, is acknowledging the accomplishments of women.
And you're certainly helping to spread awareness of Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz, because it does seem unfortunate that her name is not better known. On that same topic that was brought up about the sort of religious opposition, I found it interesting that the Mother Superior at the convent told Sor Juana that her duty was holy ignorance. Which is a really strange pairing of terms. And then you've got this wonderful letter that Sor Juana writes when she's dismissing her confessor. She gets rid of her confessor and makes the argument that God couldn't possibly have wanted women to be ignorant, or he wouldn't have given them brains. And she writes, "Is not God as ultimate goodness also ultimate wisdom? Well, then why should ignorance be more pleasing to him than learning? Why is it that which in all others was considered good judged to be evil in my case?"
Right. I mean, we see how Sor Juana, time and time again, stood up for her beliefs and for the right for women to become educated, to learn, and in some cases, it's unfortunate how we see that she had to retract some of the things that she said. But I mean, her writings speak for themselves. I mean, we know what she was thinking, and it's very obvious. And so, I think that when you analyze the situation as a whole, you see the role that the church played, and you see where Sor Juana stood, and how she stood firmly. She stood firmly on her ground, and in some cases, you're able to understand why she had to retract certain things, and that in itself is unfortunate. But the fact that more and more people, I believe, are learning about Sor Juana, certainly, I think a lot more people need to learn more about Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz and who she was and what she meant to the women in the 17th century. And what she means to women now.
Yes, and I was struck by parallels between Sor Juana's story and that of other women writers. For example, that marvelous account of the, what is it, 40 men that decided to subject Sor Juana to a sort of oral exam where they were going to quiz her on theology and find out, was she really the person she claimed to be, or was she just getting help from some man? Because they couldn't believe a woman could write such things, so they gave her a test. Well, that's much like Phyllis Wheatley, the first African-American woman poet, who was put in a room in Boston and made to write poetry on the spot so that she had to prove that nobody had helped this slave write poetry.
Right, and it goes back to what the previous caller had said earlier, that, actually the last two callers, really in a nutshell what we're saying is that time and time again throughout history, women have unfortunately had to prove themselves over and over again. They've had to go the extra mile. They've had to, and again, they continue to face this need to prove themselves to men. To those that are, in some cases or many cases, more ignorant, or ignorant rather, and uninformed. And it's unfortunate, but this, historically, if you draw parallels between Sor Juana's experience and other women, you see that this is the unfortunate situation that women continue to be faced with.
Now, you work, Jorge, at the Mexican Fine Arts Center, and this is a festival. I know here at the university once I was told I couldn't call something a festival. It sounded too fun. I had to call it a conference. But tell me about this festival that's in its 13th year. How do you sort of commemorate Sor Juana?
You can call it a festival.
I'm glad. It sounds more fun.
I work for the Mexican Fine Arts Center Museum in Chicago. It's the only accredited Latino museum in the United States, and so we 13 years ago started doing the Sor Juana Festival. A committee of women was formed, and we started talking about honoring the many accomplishments that women have and contributions that women have made to the arts, to our community, and identifying all these different women that are CEOs, executive directors, that are out there as leaders of the Mexican community, the Latino community, and women who, and women of any nationality who are out there truly embodying the spirit of Sor Juana. I keep saying that because it's so important.
Well, clarify for that. When you say the spirit of Sor Juana, what does that mean to you?
I say that because when we were putting together this year's brochure, we came up with, and I said this earlier, with words that we felt truly represented what the festival was all about. And these are words like creative, strong, independent, dignified, determined. These are all words that also represent Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. And the festival includes women who we feel represent these very same things. And so when we say the spirit of Sor Juana was a strong woman. She was a scholar. She was, as you mentioned earlier, the William Shakespeare of the Americas. And she did a lot for women in the 17th century.
That's so wonderful. And we have a link to your website about the festival on our Here on Earth site. Jorge Valdivia from the Mexican Fine Arts Center, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
You'll find links to Amanda Powell, our first guest, and also to the Mexican Fine Arts Center when you visit hereonearth.org. Plus, you can post your thoughts at our web forum and subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like a copy of this program, call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444 and ask for program number 1018K. Here on Earth is produced by Carmen Jackson, Joe Hartke, Lisa Boo, Steve Selasnik, Lisa Nett, Sarah Grace Turner, and myself, in cooperation with the Division of International Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, online at www.international.wisc.edu. I'm Emily Auerbach, sitting in this week for Jean Faraca, who's off in China. Thanks for listening. Thank you.